Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor, and I'm really excited today because we have Mr. Patterson with us, who is the principal at my kids' junior high school. So, Mr. Patterson, how are you today?
Doing great. So good to be with you guys.
Oh, good. So glad you're here and glad that you can step away from the chaos of junior high for a minute. As a way of background, Michelle, Matt Patterson and I have known each other these past few years because I'm involved with the PTA and the school community council. And I will tell you, Matt is beloved as a principal. He's got an assistant principal, Ben Prawl. The two of them work remarkably well together, and they just have good chemistry, good synergy, making some good cultural changes in the junior high, making wonderful progress and things as a parent that so many of us appreciate. But I'll admit, I didn't know until about a week ago anything about Mr. Patterson's background. And I apologize for that, Matt. I've never once said, hey, tell me about you. We get so caught up in let's talk about the kids, let's talk about testing, let's talk about the environment and behavior and how do we help these young people. But I'm really grateful that you would be here with us, Matt, and tell us a little bit about you and your personal life journey and what you have learned and discovered about resilience. So thanks for taking time out of the day.
Oh, no, you're great. Like I said, I happened to come across your podcast, and I was like, I know who this is. And so I started listening, and I'm like, I may have a story to share. So I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's great. Let's just jump right into it. Tell us who you are. Give us a little introduction for those that don't know you. And then we're going to dive into what is resilience? What does it look like? How do you have it? How do you develop it? How do you discover it?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in the Ogden Valley as a little kid. It was during the storms of 83, 84, so it's kind of relevant right now that we're talking about those, not out of snow again. But we actually ended up moving to Davis County. And shortly after we lived in Davis County, it was actually Halloween. I was 10 years old. And I actually gone to the garage to get something for my costume. And my dad was in the garage, the car on, with asphyxiated with carbon monoxide poisoning. And he had been dealing with some mental health issues and had experienced mental health concerns with him over the years as a young child. I'd come home and he would be frustrated at us for maybe standing on a space that he thought he was in a different environment. He was a construction worker, and he'd be acting like he was doing some work on a construction site, but he was at home in our front room, and we would get yelled at or there'd be frustration there. So I knew that my dad had struggled with some things, but definitely that day when 10 years old, I knew that was going to change everything for our little family.
Okay, so Matt, horrible. First, I'm sorry, as
no,
I'm listening
good.
To yeah. this.
Tell to be us, a 10-year-old that found
and you
your
discovered
father.
Him. Tell us quickly, who else is in your family at the time, and was everybody living in the same home?
Yes, so I have two younger brothers. We're all 3 years apart. So, next younger brother would have been 7, and my youngest brother would have been 4 at the time. So, and then of course my mom. My mom was there. Yep.
Okay, so this is hauntingly. There's so many similarities here that I really can't believe we've never discovered this in the years that we've served together at the school. I was 10 when my dad died. My birthday's on Halloween, and my dad died by carbon monoxide poisoning in the car.
Like,
are this
you
is
kidding?
This is shocking. Yeah. He wasn't in the garage, and I didn't discover him, though. I can't imagine. If it's not too much to ask, walk me through your 10-year-old little brain. Do you go get mom? Do you call 911? Do you turn and run? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think it was partly confusing. It seemed like he was probably just asleep for me, so that was, young enough to not really process exactly what was wrong. But I certainly went and got my mom, and at that point, there's a lot of just emptiness. I don't really remember all the chaos that would have ensued with that. But my next memory is that I would ask my mom if I could go trick or treating, and I just wanted desperately in that moment to be a normal kid. We had a neighbor friend that actually took me and my next younger brother trick-or-treating, which is as strange as that sounds.
No, actually, it doesn't sound strange.
Needed to do so.
Yeah. Michelle and I have both lost our spouses and we have children. And my brother took my boys bowling the day Brent died. And my daughter went to buy a new pair of shoes with my sister-in-law. So that's you tapped into something about resilience for a child. The child just wants it to be normal. The adult is so lost and caught up in the awareness. Like you said, there's a certain degree of just, I don't really know what's going along, innocence of childhood, even though you might know something's wrong. But there's just that, hey, and by the way, can I just go back outside? So, wow. All right, seven and four. You're the oldest at 10.
Yes.
What does life look like for the next couple of years? You go trick-or-treating that day. Life is completely turned upside down. Walk us through the next little bit of your childhood, what you remember and what you're comfortable sharing.
Certainly, you watch your mom grieve. You watch her worry about her family at this point, you know. And so she hadn't worked, so she started to work. She was a secretary at the LDS Seminary at Northridge High School. So that was kind of fun to watch her just kind of be involved at that level. But, yeah, so having mom go to work and but I just remember those kind of things. It was, you know, just you could tell that financially it was tight, and there was a lot of tears. You'd see, you know, mom would try to protect us, but as the oldest, you kind of got a sense that she was working through things. And so what happened as a result is I just became really, really close to my mom. I became really, really keenly aware of when she needed me to be present and how to work with my younger siblings. And then as I got older, you started realizing you take some of the roles on as the dad, right? So I remember fixing bikes as a little kid and getting on the roof and helping fix the air conditioner or working on sprinklers and even just, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old kid. But you start to learn that mom doesn't have a lot of fun, so you start to figure out jobs or how to make odd money. And but the moments that I will cherish for life, my mom and I had a routine that I'd come home from school and I'd help with dinner. I actually love to cook now. I cook a good portion even at my house right now just because I have that love. But in the evening, we'd watch the evening news, and then we'd watch MASH and talk about the day and then go off to bed. But those are some memories that I'll never forget. She had a waterbed, and so I'd ride the waterbed as we talked.
the waterbed. Right, yeah, we did. Right. We did.
So waterbed and MASH. Every once in a while, you got lucky and got to watch the Love Boat after that.
Oh, but, you know, there we go. Yeah, the Love Boat. Okay, what about the boys? If mom's at work, obviously, in order to pay those bills, were they in school and then you helped watch them after school? Was there a babysitter or daycare involved? What do you do with those two little guys?
No, yeah, it was us. We were just the three of us are super tight. We lived in a great neighborhood, but you know, you have a community that is there to support you. And we had that, you know, neighbors and friends and you know, when you're little, you don't really always pay attention to it. But now that I'm an adult, and
looking
part
back,
of the reason why I'm an administrator is that there's so many people that help with that resilience, you know, that connect, that push you along, right? And they're there to support you. That idea about mourning with those that mourn and stand by those that need standing by, it's huge. You know, and so there was just lots of people that were there. I remember several Christmases where Santa Claus came to the door and endless amount of presents. I'll never forget one Christmas where we wanted a Nintendo so bad, but we knew that probably was not going to be a thing.
Sure, what are the odds?
And then I remember being underneath the tree, and we just, all three of us just sobbed, and there was excitement, and there's the emotional impact of a Nintendo, you know, it was awesome. We knew it was not mom. We knew it was something greater. And, you know, I'm sure my younger brothers was all in on Santa Claus. I was old enough to know that
somebody
was more
had
than
to
that.
Help.
Yeah.
So to this day, do you know,
no,
did mom scrimp and scrape to buy the Nintendo? Did a neighbor step in and help? Do you know logistically who?
I have no idea.
You just, it was just
no
there.
No idea. No idea for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
But so the answer to that is, we're bonded together and we work together, but there was lots of hands and eyes that paid attention to us, you know?
How beautiful. Okay, Matt, we're going to take a break and come back. I know there's more to the story. We wish that was all there was to the story, but I know there's more. We'll be right back. Okay, so you're 10, you're then 11, 12, 13, because what Michelle and I talk about often, and you know, even after you bury someone, it feels like time stops, and yet time continues. So you and the boys grow. Mom's working as a secretary at the seminary classes, and walk us through, you somehow make it through elementary. Give us maybe junior high, high school for you and the boys, and then what happens as you get a little bit older?
You know, for me personally, there was probably probably between 10 and 15 was hard. I was an introvert. Didn't like talking to people. Kids would ask questions that I didn't know how to respond. Sometimes even kids in my mind were probably kind of mean or insensitive, I guess maybe the better term to put it. And so I just kind of became kind of recluse. And I remember my mom multiple times, like, just go out, find somebody to play with, somebody, go look for somebody to do something with. And I had a really hard time with that. But I had a new kid that moved into the neighborhood from Idaho, and his name is Scott. And he was awkward and new to the neighborhood, too, and we became just best friends.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And we inseparable. And he had an amazing family, and they just kind of adopted me, and then the friendship kind of grew. And so super, super fortunate to just have some friends that just kind of brought me out of my shell. And you know, when I turned 16, 17, 18, and, you know, you're going on this date and you're hanging out with us. And just, I started to, I guess my personality and who I am today started to show up, you know, my confidence in myself and confidence in the ability to reach out to others and bring others into our circle started to show up too as well. So it was very, very grateful for friends that helped shape me, which we know, right? And speaking of junior high and high school, friends are huge, right?
It's a big determination of how your kids will make it through.
Yeah.
I see the difference in my kids, the ones that were able to have good, solid relationships with kids that had their heads on, as opposed to some of my other kids that found their way to other kids.
I appreciate what you mentioned, that your, you know, this best friend Scott had a great family, and that family kind of stepped in and was helpful to you. I found the same experience in my life. I look back at some of my junior high and high school friends, and the friends were awesome, but I remember loving being in their homes. I loved being with their parents. I remember even some of the rules that their parents had that maybe my mom didn't have the bandwidth to have for us or hadn't thought of. And I was very motivated by my friends and the backgrounds they had come from. So did you graduate from Northridge High? Is that where mom was working in that seminary? Is that
no.
Or where were you at school?
Yeah, I was at Clearfield High.
Okay. So still in Davis. All right, so you graduate Clearfield High. What happens next?
So I go on an LDS mission. I go serve in Georgia.
Macon, Georgia mission. So, oh, stop. That's where my brother-in-law served. I feel like we're living parallel lives, Matt. This is almost getting creepy. My mom's a secretary, too. Like, she went back to work as a secretary. Okay. Clearfield High, Macon, Georgia. You came back and went to college. Yep. I mean, I know you have a degree in education at some point.
Yep. I start school. I got to tell a quick little story. I dated a girl a couple of times, and all my buddies were saying, hey, let's go on a date. We're going to go to the canyon. And she had to work, and so I was lamenting on my stairs. And I'll never forget the moment my mom actually put my hand around my shoulder and just said, hey, Matt, you're going to be all right, but can I offer a suggestion of who might go on a date with you? And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to go good, right, Mom? Mom offering a date suggestion. So she says, yeah, our next-door neighbor, and I actually hung out with her older brother. His name is Chris. And she's like, I bet you Melinda would want to go on a date with you. And I'm like, I don't know about that. But
it's the girl next door, Mom.
It is literally the girl next door. And so I trusted my mom. I walked across the street, knocked on the door, and her mom invited me in to ask me how things were going and what's life like. And I says, hey, then she pauses, like, well, why are you over here? I'm like, I actually see if Melinda is available to maybe want to go on a date. And she's like, oh, she's actually already on a date.
Oh,
anyway,
smash.
So, I know. So, but I scoped things out at church the next Sunday, and I'm like, okay, yeah, this is definitely something I want to ask out later on. And anyway, so we went on a date a month or so later.
He's saying, without saying it, she was pursuable.
She was pursuable.
I love that.
That's politically correct. But anyway,
like your mom suggested it, so you have to back it up.
Right.
But no, married the girl next door. And part of the story, Matt, I didn't know that.
That's sweet.
So, and but my mother and father-in-law are incredible, too, and they're tremendous resilience. But yeah, as a Weber State, going to school, I started out as wanting to be a landscape architect.
Oh, cool.
but I just got into science classes and was changed over to geology, wanted to be actually into hydrology.
Awesome.
Working on water systems. But as I got a little further down the line, I realized that it was a lot of contract work, and a lot of it was traveling all over the world. And I had this little family at this point. I'd been, got married and had a little boy, and I just thought, oh, I just can't do it. And I had out of the blue, a professor that grabbed me and says, hey, Matt, I don't know if you thought about this, but you would be a phenomenal teacher. And
what was your reaction?
There, I was like, I don't know about that. But once again, I went home and mom sat me down and said, you know what? You would be a great teacher. And I actually had been doing a little bit of teaching in the seminaries. Had that connection with her work and so it just kind of all lined up together and said, yeah, you know what, I want to give back, I want to teach kids, and I've got a story to tell, and I love science, and I'm kind of a dork, and I think this could work. So I switched.
So where and when, what age did you teach, for how long?
So I started teaching, I was almost 26 in my first school year, I got my first job was actually at Orion Junior High, where I'm now the principal, and I taught there
for
7 years. And that was the very first year Orion opened, and I loved it. I just absolutely fell in love with teaching. I loved the kids. I ended up coaching track and NAL and basketball, and just I just felt like it was home.
You're kind of a jack of all trades. I didn't know you had done the coaching as well. I knew you had been a science teacher. I didn't know you had the other side of it.
I ran track in junior high and high school, and so it became part of my persona. But I just had so many kids that I realized that I could impact and help them with their own resilience story, and pick themselves back up and keep going.
Because
and,
you've had to do it, so you're not just talking about it, but you've lived it.
Yeah.
So tell us.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, as I started to, I come up with a crazy analogy with this idea of resilience. It's like a really good superhero story, right? Resilience is those superheroes that get kicked down, but they build more of a resolve and more of a desire to meet their intended outcome, right? And so as I started realizing that in my own life, I'm like, my resolve is to take care of my own little family, but it is to help these kids reach their own story, reach their own potential. And so I started seeing that I could create these new superheroes that could have families of their own and contribute to society, and that they would just love that. And I had, so I don't know, it's just this idea that this is perpetual development of successful peoples that can show resilience in their own lives, because everybody has their own stories. I started diving into kids' lives, and they were dealing with really crappy stuff too.
Everyone. Right. We all do, from the beginning to the end.
And junior high is its own difficult age, even if you've got a fairly stable personal life. Junior high, that developmental age. Matt, talk to me about your family during these early college years. You mentioned you graduated. Your mom had some connections to seminary, so you taught there for a little bit. You've married the cute girl next door, and you're starting your own family. Where's your mom and your brothers in this early adulthood?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that. I actually have to go back. So that's the positive story. Is I graduated and became a teacher and had that. But in my second year of college, actually, so I'm almost a junior. I'm actually in a teacher development course with an amazing professor that helped shape me too. But I get a call from my brother that my mom is in the hospital and it's not looking good. She'd suffered from headaches and migraines, but they were kind of ramping up. They were getting more and more severe. And she just recently got married about a year and a half prior. And, actually lived up in Mountain Green, where I'm currently in that same valley, but she actually drove herself to the hospital and was actually at the ER when her splenic artery ruptured.
Oh my gosh.
She's in the hospital. There's nowhere else she could be better, but they could not get that artery captured, and she bled and passed away within about 5 or 6 hours.
But I never got to talk to her again.
She was gone, not responsive, after surgery, and I was on life support and made the decision to pull her off life support.
Were either of your brothers or your stepdad able to be there with her at the hospital, or was she by herself?
My next younger brother, he was actually works at the hospital, so he was there. When they were working on her. But they sit at the artery rupture before he had a chance to even connect, so he didn't have a chance to communicate with her beforehand either.
Okay.
And then the youngest brother, he was on a mission in Louisiana, so he was unaware of all of this until we were able to get a hold of him later on that day.
Okay, I don't even know what to ask other than now what. Were you married? Were you and Melinda married at the time?
Where did
the boys go? Did they stay? I mean, the missionary, are they living with the stepdad? Do they live on their own? That's still very young to now be orphans.
Yeah. So my youngest brother, he decided to stay on his mission. He had about 8 months left, 9 months left. So he decided to stay, which is remarkable in itself.
Yeah.
He didn't even come home he just said, hey, you know what? Let me listen to the funeral and I have a piece that you want me to read. And then my next younger, he was living with the father-in-law, but he ended up moving out and got an apartment across the way from where Melinda and I were at.
Okay.
I did have my oldest child as well. He was only a year old, and yeah, he was the love of my mom's life. And so we were at least grateful for that piece, that she had her one grandchild there.
Yeah.
And then we know that she's taking care of the rest on the other side. But my next younger brother, he actually was one of our great babysitters. So he took care of my son while we were working and going to school and finished up student teaching and those things. And so he became an integral part in our family's life. And
oh my goodness.
But yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick break and let everybody catch their breath as we're just picturing this. When we come back, let's talk about resilience, Matt. You've had it, you've developed it, you've learned it, you've taught it, you've lived it for years. Let's talk about it as soon as we come back. Okay, Matt, I think I could answer my own question, what is resilience, by saying, see also Matt Patterson. Tell me, what is resilience? What have you learned? Tools and tips? What do you try to share and teach? You've had plenty of experiences in life to test that resilience. Talk to us about it.
Early on, I remember probably shortly after my dad passed away, I was sitting there alone and commiserating and just struggling, and I just had an overwhelming feeling of my young, just being young, 10 years old, having this overwhelming thought come across my head that I had a choice. Every second of every day, I had a choice, and the choice was to find the positive and find the joy in life, or to just be bitter and angry and upset. And from that singularity moment, it changed my life, and I just realized from that point that I was going to choose. I was going to choose the positive. And not that every day has been that way, but that has been the overarching theme. And I just have realized that there's always going to be something that comes in my way. And you just have to keep standing up. The resilience is just keep standing up and with even more determination, keep moving forward. And more importantly, learn from what you have gained, right? The thicker the skin or the more experiences to harden up the bones or the grit or whatever it ends up being. But you just have to reflect on the experiences you've learned and realize that there's so many gifts in this life. There's so many positives. There's so many things that are blessings every day. And then to be able to realize that you can then contribute to somebody else. And that's that idea of service and giving is what perpetuates you forward. So I think if people aren't resilient or haven't struggling with the resilient, resiliency, you got to get outside yourself, and you got to start understanding other people's story. And that's why I love you guys' podcast, because it is gives you a chance to realize that there's people that need you to just put their arm around them or smile or tell them they got it, or really dive into their lives and provide the support that I know people have done that to me in my life. In my mind, that's resiliency.
Well, I love it. You've hit a lot of key points of resiliency. I love that you brought up reflection. It's one that I don't hear very often on our show, but I'm in a coaching program, and it's one of the things that I've been learning most as I go along learning the coaching and as I work with other people, the value of reflection. And resiliency is owning up to what is happening, facing the reality of it. But the next step is to say, what can I learn? And you can only answer that question by spending time in reflection. So I love that you brought that up, and you brought up, you know, learning the lessons, and you're not going to learn what those lessons are unless you take that time for reflection. And then I love the last point you made about serving others. Oh my goodness. Serving others is just such a big opportunity to be able to step outside ourselves for a moment. In the situation that you're in, I love that you are forwarding on your life lessons of resiliency and building that in youth. I think it's so critical and key. They are our future, right? Like, we need healthy, strong, resilient people moving forward. We're living in really, really tough times. On top of what it is in everyday life, it's hard enough. But these days are even more challenging. And so, yes, stepping out and serving others, but also to be able to, in our service of others, I think we often find we're not alone in this. We may be struggling, but in our service to others, we can realize we're not alone. Somebody else is struggling, and I may not be able to know exactly what I need right now, but I can help this person with their needs. And sometimes that helps us discover what it is we need, right? So it all ties in together.
Yeah.
Powerful lessons.
It's incredible, Matt. Thank you for sharing that. Any other thoughts on resilience or what it is or looks like in your life today?
No, I'm grateful for, you know, I'm just grateful for the experiences I have had, you know, and you just become stronger and stronger. I think one of my favorite quotes of all time that I hang my hat on all the time is that self-worth comes from overcoming adversity. And that quote was from Abraham Lincoln, which makes even more impactful. But it's that idea that you try and trust. It's something that you have. It happens to you all the time. From when you're a little teeny tiny kid, when you learn how to tie your shoes, you have worth, right? You have self-worth. But this, if you can just remember, when you overcome adversity, when you overcome that challenge, that you're stronger, you're better, and your own worth on this earth is more impactful. And so when you're going through those things, they're not awesome. They're not fun at all. But when you merge out of them, if you can reflect back and you can really think about, you've gained more, you're better, and you have a greater opportunity for a greater level of influence as a result of it, is why we're here, right? What we're trying to figure out.
Matt, this is remarkable. I'm sitting here as you're talking, and I just messaged like all my PTA mom friends at Orion to say, ladies, you have to listen. We've known, we've respected you. We've known you bring something beautiful to the table. We've seen the way you compassionately work with our kids. And I'm embarrassed again to admit we had no idea why. We had no idea what refiner's fire you have gone through that has made you now a wonderful advocate for these teens. I sometimes joke, I am such a strong proponent of public education because I'm a product of it. It was my teachers that believed in me. It was my friends and their families that helped raise me and helped, you know, buoy up my mom, who was completely overwhelmed as a single mother. And I still have my mom. I'm decades down the road and my mom is still here. I can't imagine that second blow so early in your young adulthood. I can't thank you enough for being so open and vulnerable with us, for sharing so much of your life experience. I do have a huge favor to ask if you're willing, and I hope you'll say yes. I'd love to have you come back for another conversation and talk about how you incorporate your life experience and your understanding of resilience and potential and possibility and gratitude and all of these things, and what that maybe looks like in a teenage setting. You work with hundreds of teenagers a day, which is thousands over the course of the years, either in the classroom or as an administrator. I know that as parents and grandparents who might be listening, we'd probably all benefit from maybe some insight for how you are helping young people in that school setting and how we might be able to help raise our kids and guide them and help them develop that resilience, because we want nothing more than for our kids to have that deep sense of self-worth. They were born with it, but we need them to realize it. And I think you'll probably have quite a bit to offer us, if you're willing, to do maybe a follow-on conversation about what resilience in a particularly adolescent school education setting looks like.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's the life's work right now, isn't it? It's fun, and I love coming every day and interacting with these amazing kids, and sometimes as challenging as they are, I see who they're going to become, right? And I think that's probably my segue, is that I think we have to see every single person who they can become and not who they are right now. Because teenagers are challenging. You see them who they are right now, and you're like, man, you're
a punk. You are a junior high kid. I've got a couple at my house.
We have to see them who they'll become, right? Mm. And then we'll be able to provide the support and the love and the wraparound services to be able to get them there. And that's our job. And whether you're a parent or a grandparent or a community member or whoever, we have a role to play, because they are our future, and the better they become, the better we perpetuate that.
Oh, so beautiful. Okay, thank you. So we will schedule a follow-on and get some insight there. In closing, Matt, I hope this isn't I hope this is okay. I didn't ask you if I can share this, but I just want to close with one experience I had with you this school year. So I'm the PTA president at Orion, where Matt's our principal, and we have monthly meetings, and this man, as busy as he is, takes time out to come talk to parents, update parents, answer questions from parents. And there was one particular day when a lot had been happening at the school. There had been some rumors going around, and there was extra law enforcement on hand just to make sure everyone was safe. And there's some kids that aren't on their best behavior. And just there was a lot going on. I just remember there being kind of this atmosphere where everything was really heavy and really thick. And so, of course, we're all moms and we're meeting in the conference room and getting together to see, you know, what's on the calendar next and how we can help support the school. And Matt, you walked in and you looked so exhausted, and you looked, and I don't mean this as an insult. I actually mean it as a huge compliment. No. You looked exhausted and broken, and you looked as if you were carrying the burden of all 1,000 of those junior high kids. And I will never forget that look, as I realized how much you love our children. And I had no idea what your personal background was to add to that and to develop that compassion within you. But I remember several of us moms leaving that meeting just saying, for one, I want to give you a raise. Can I pay you more? Holy cow, you should be paid more. But we just walked away saying we could see in your entire physical persona how much you love the potential in each of those kids, even the ones being total punks right now. And I appreciate that. I thank you for that. I'm excited to continue the conversation and maybe get a little bit more of the professional academic side of what it looks like. You know, most of us are raising a couple of teenagers. You're raising thousands. So you've got some experience to share. But just thank you, Matt. Greatest respect. I will be very sad the day the school district decides we have to share you with someone else.
Well, I appreciate it. And thanks for this opportunity. I've enjoyed it. It's been nice to reflect and slow down enough to think about.
I'm sure you've got a few fires to put out back in the building, so we'll let you get back to the classroom. And just again, thank you for your time. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us today. I'm sure you are walking away like me with a lot to think about and reflect on, and great lessons that Matt Patterson has shared with us today. If you're listening and you like this podcast, please find us on your favorite platform, and don't just listen, but like us, give us a rating and a review, and help us know how we can improve the show. And of course, our number one goal for improving the show is to involve you in it. Matt was a listener who found the show, listened a few times to some episodes, and realized he also had a story to share. If you're the listener right now and you have a story to share, we would love to connect with you. You can find us on Facebook at Relentlessly Resilient, or on Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast, or you can email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com. We'd love to hear from you and have you share your story and teach us what you know and have experienced about being relentlessly resilient.
Matt Patterson, I just want to say thank you for coming on. Very inspiring and very vulnerable. So thank you. Remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.
Take care, everybody.